Well, hey everyone, welcome to episode 363 of F-Stop, Collaborate, and Listen with your host, Matt Payne. This week on the podcast, I had a great conversation with Kent Burkhardsmeyer. Kent was introduced to me by former guest Tim Chapman, and as soon as I discovered his approach to making photography, I knew that he would be a great fit for the podcast. Kent and I share a lot of common beliefs relating to nature's power for healing, and so our conversation was easy and enjoyable. I'm going to spare you my Patreon spiel today and just thank you all for your support of the show. Thank you. Okay, let's get to this week's episode with Kent Burkhardsmeyer. All right, Kent Burkhardsmeyer, it's great to have you on the podcast.
Thank you. It's great to be on. Thanks.
Yeah, of course. I was really excited when our mutual friend Tim Chapman, who was on the podcast several years ago, reached out to me and he said, "Hey, I have this friend named Kent that you should totally have on your show." And the more I got looking into you and what you do, I was like, "Yeah, that sounds perfect." So here we are.
All right. Yeah, I was Tim's a great friend. We met about 2019. We met in China on a workshop together. And then last year, we went to Bolivia and Chile together to photograph the Salar de Uyuni. So got to spend a lot of times, 3 weeks basically together. So on both trips. So it's fun. He's a super good guy, great photographer.
Yeah, and if people haven't listened to that episode, he has a gigantic camera collection of cameras that have gone to space, which is super cool.
Yeah, and you can go down a whole nother avenue with him on that conversation. Oh my gosh, he knows all about it. So.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Well, for people who aren't familiar with you and your photography, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay, so I'm a full-time photographer, do landscape, nature. I've been doing that since 2015. Prior to that, I was in the corporate world for like 30 years in IT. And I live in, well, where I live is an interesting conversation because I live full-time in an RV, but I'm domiciled in South Florida outside of Fort Lauderdale, where I've lived since 2001. And the RV is sitting in San Diego right now. We'll go back to it in March, and then we'll be back on the road. So my wife and I have been doing this. This will be we'll be starting our fourth year in April. And travel around North America, basically to do photography, get out in nature, etc. I have two adult kids. The one lives in Seattle, one lives in Atlanta. We have no pets, so we're just pretty flexible on that. And yeah, that's kind of what I do full-time, but as landscape photographer. And now I also consider myself, I say I'm a photographic artist and a poetic writer. I started doing some poetic writing during the pandemic and continue that, but I like to kind of do more artistic, or I like to think things more artistically than just straight camera shots.
Got it. Well, man, so real quick, the RV stuff. So you go back to San Diego in springtime. Do you have like a set journey that you do, or is it different every year? How does that work?
First year, we started 2021. It was everybody's out there. So there's some great apps you can plot things. So we started late and we were just plotting and we had some set places to go to. So we bought the place, the camper site unseen out of San Diego, and we're in Fort Lauderdale. So we sold our condo, we packed up stuff in a storage, we rented a Cruise America and a U-Haul. We zipped across in 6 days from Fort Lauderdale to San Diego, picked up our RV and truck. We bought it combined. It's a fifth wheel. It's 40 feet. So we're really towing a house. And we started plotting out, and I had to get to a class reunion that got delayed. I grew up in North Dakota. So we headed up to Bismarck, North Dakota. And gosh, we were doing in 30 days, 25, 30 days, we went from San Diego to North Dakota, and we were stopping like for 2 or 3 days, a lot of setup and shut down and a lot of miles, but it was all learning experience for us. And then we started replotting and we kind of zigzagged around, crisscrossed mostly Western United States that year, ended up Oh, no, we actually came all the way back to Fort Lauderdale in January, parked the RV in a cover place for 4 months, rented a place here for 4 months, snowbird, I guess, for the first time, we'd say. And then we went up the East Coast. And so we would plot where we were going in this app. It would tell us, it would help direct us so we didn't go under bridges that were shorter than our RV because we need 13 and a half feet. Yeah, so a lot of things we learned about that. Then we went up into Canada, went across Canada, came back to the West Coast, went down to San Diego, parked it there, flew this time to Fort Lauderdale, rented a place, then flew back, and then decided we liked Canada so much. So last summer we went, and late spring we went up to Vancouver Island, and then we went west, or went from the west to the east, until we got to the plains of Canada. We dropped back into North Dakota, and there was a lot of fires in Quebec and a lot of floods in Vermont. So we decided to turn around and go back to the west. We parked a month in Montana, in Kalispell area. And then we decided, oh, let's start looking for houses. So we looked last fall for houses in Kalispell, Missoula. Didn't find anything we liked. So we said, drove back to San Diego with the RV. And now when we go back in March, we're going to go back up to Missoula and park for 2 months and look for a house and see if we can find something in Montana.
Nice. So. That's quite the adventure.
Yeah. So we're a little less prepared this time. I just plotted last week the trip from San Diego to Missoula. We like to spend minimum 4 days at a site, and if there's something from a photographic perspective in the area, then we'll stay longer so we can explore, do some scouting, check on the weather, and hopefully get some good, interesting things. So
sounds like quite the lifestyle. I'm a little bit jealous.
It's a committed life. It's a committed to be kind of a flexible handyman, comfortable in small spaces, especially if you're traveling with somebody else, and love outdoors, because that's the key. We're outdoors every day. We grill all the time outside. We'll sit out and have a fire when there's no bands, and then we're out hiking and exploring. So that part is great.
Yeah. Well, let's dive into some photography. First of all, how did you even get into photography to begin with?
I was like most people, well, a lot of people. I started off in high school as a yearbook, sports photographer, yearbook. Another classmate and I did all the sports. And then that was back in the late 70s. And then I just had a camera all the time. But I would not say I was a photographer then. I had a SLR, I had a Canon AE-1 and some lenses, but I didn't really know what I was doing, or I was just taking pictures and I liked it. And I'd say the real jump into photography was when my son was in soccer. For 10 years, I was photographing. He was travel soccer, so we had games like 4 days a week. I was taking pictures. I was doing the 10,000 clicks a year. And a lot of camera in front of me, many hours, and it was year round basically. And then I would probably say 2011, I started really kind of researching, studying, self-taught, learning the craft better, learning cameras, learning settings and ideas. And then in 2015, I joined up with some places here in South Florida. There's a photo group called Palm Beach Photographic Center, and they do an annual thing called Photo Fusion every January. So I used to do that and learn from people, do some outdoor workshops. And then I met a group of people in a adult art community here that there's about 10 of us are all photographers, and we just started helping each other out. And that's when I decided I needed to think something different about corporate America, and I really liked photography. So I decided I would self-impose a sabbatical, try it for was going to be 1 year, but I thought I better plan for 2 years, better save for 2 years, so that in case, or not in case, I actually thought I was going to go back into the corporate world, that it would take me a year to get in. And then 2015, enjoyed it, and just, I've been doing it ever since, full time. I never went back to the corporate world, and I realized it's landscape. I tried street photography. I knew I did not want to do portraiture or weddings or sort of the commercial photography. I knew I did not want to do that. I'd always been an outdoors person. So that was what really led me to it. And I learned the possibilities from this group of photographers, because we had a mixture of abstract photographers, portrait photographers, street photographers, some landscape, black and white, color, some composite artists, and I just started seeing what could be done, and they helped me along this journey.
So. Nice. Well, we'll definitely dive deeper into the corporate transition for a bonus episode for our Patreon supporters later on. And we'll talk more later as well about this idea of collaborating with other photographers on projects and things of that nature. But I have a few other questions I wanted to dive into before we went there.
Sure.
So when we had first corresponded, you had mentioned that you've lived in a lot of different places all over the planet for your job. And I was curious if you could speak about all of those places that you've lived and how living in such diverse areas has contributed to you as an artist.
Yeah, I thought that was that's a great question. And I didn't put a lot of thought into it. But in reality, it really has, because it helps with travel. So being willing and interested in seeing things in other places. I know some people like to focus on their backyard, if you will, their neighborhood, and really learn that extremely well. And I have aspirations of doing that. I've visited places again and that multiple times. But I think from having lived overseas in, I think, 5 countries, it's opened my eyes to more exploratory in seeing different areas and also different cultures, different people. Like I mentioned early on about going last year to Bolivia with Tim Chapman. So that might have made me scared 10 years or before I ever lived overseas. I might have been very nervous about doing that and cautious, maybe reluctant to do that. But now having lived and worked overseas, it excited me. It's like, oh, there's nothing. I've been through scenarios where going to a place where you don't know the country, you don't know the language, you don't know the culture, and I survived. So that has helped from the exploration part. And then being willing to see things with different eye sets than, as a traditional American, I knew one language, and that was English, and probably some would say I didn't know that very well. But being able to just kind of look at communities, whether I'm traveling small rural communities in North America or large urban areas, going to other countries and photograph there, trying to see things maybe from their perspective and the local perspective, as opposed to a tourist perspective. And that was, so that I think hopefully is reflected in some of my images, and that where I like to find the ordinary out of the extraordinary in a way. I mean, I'll do the sort of grand landscapes, et cetera, or the intimate ones. But sometimes I will find, like, especially when we're RVing, I'll find an area that it's not, you know, it's not a sweet spot everybody's gone to and that, but I find the beauty there, and I hone in on photographing that and what really touches my eyes and heart. So I think that's probably been a huge influence to me.
I love that. Well, I really want to dive deep into one of the main topics for our conversation. So you have 2 books. You sent them both over to me. Thank you so much for doing that. One is called Stillness. The other is called Awareness. And they're in a series of books that you call Whispers from Nature. And they were both released at the same time. I was curious if you could talk a little bit about how those books came to be and what you hope to accomplish by publishing them.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I have a feeling most of us photographers like to have a photo book. We'd like to print something and sort of, maybe it's our little legacy. And I was thinking about that, and I've seen quite a few, but a lot of people do that, a lot of photographers. So what could I be, how would I be different other than my images and maybe the format or style, but they're in all shapes and forms and sizes, etc. So I didn't know. I just put it on hold. I knew I wanted to do one at one time. During the pandemic, though, I had a lot of trips that got canceled in 2020. Like, I was going to go to Spain, and then we were going to go to England. We had some ideas my wife and I wanted to do photographically and tour-wise, and it just all got shut down. So I was getting stir-crazy, a little depressed, I would probably say, and I had been reading a lot about meditation. I was using meditation to help get through the emotions of everything around the pandemic. And each morning, my routine would be, I'd get up, get my coffee, I'd sit down, and I'd read some books or start doing some breathing and do meditating. And I started thinking of the images, places I'd been, pictures I'd taken, and I would go look them up on my computer then, and words would just start flowing of what I was feeling or what the images were, what I'd call whispering to me is the term I'm using. So I'd start jotting them down, and at that time I was posting the image, and I'd post, I don't know if I'd call them poems, I'd call them poetic writings, but they'd be short stanzas, and I'd post them on Instagram because you had only small space to do it, and and I was getting feedback from followers that were saying, oh, these are great, these are so helpful, I can relate to you, I'm glad you're doing it. So I felt like I was contributing to others like me that were struggling through the pandemic and shut in. And then several people said, oh, you need to put them as a book, and I'd like to get one. So that got me thinking about, this could be a different way to do a photography book, and now I call it a photo poem book. So the layout is, one side will have an image and the other side will have the poems that go with it, and it's truly a meditative experience, and I wanted them to be easily seen and read at one sitting, and a lot of white space in it, and just have an opportunity, what I say, invite nature inside. So invite nature inside your house, in your home, in your heart, etc. So I started writing them, and I'd been doing the research before about photo books, so I kind of knew the thickness I wanted to have, and I thought, okay, this would be a good way. So this was March and April and May of 2020. And I just said, okay, I'm going to stop at the end of May and I'll put together a book. And I had enough, and I knew the size, so I had enough to do two books. And so I found a printing house in Canada. And I knew I did not want to do a digital on-demand printing. And so I wanted to do the traditional printing methodology. I decided to self-publish. I designed it. I learned a finishing publisher and did everything, kind of put it all together. Got a great team at Friesen, was the name of the printing house. And so we did the one book. That's actually sold almost all of the limited editions. I did two versions, a limited edition, a little bit more upscale, and then a traditional, just a regular one. And it sold most of it sold out. There's a few left on the regular one, and I'm holding some limited edition ones because I'll eventually do a collection of all of them and sell those together. And then mm-hmm. So then I did the second book the next year, and it kept, and now I've been continuing to write. So now I basically, for the most part, aren't posting images unless I put a poem with it or have one written down, and I might just put a subset of it on, whether it's Instagram or Vero is the other platform I'm using. and I've been collecting them. So I have quite a few material for probably definitely one book, maybe two books. And I used Whispers from Nature as the series. So I have some ideas of the titles for the next one. And I wait until I get a house, I think, because it actually is a lot of sit down work and stuff spread all over the place. So it probably won't be until 2025.
Yeah, I mean, self-publishing is, you have to have storage space, you have to have, you know, a workspace to actually like ship stuff out. I mean, it's a pretty involved process if you've never done it before.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And now Bean and I have an RV. All my boxes of books, I found a distribution place, so I had to ship them to them so they can ship them out when they get ordered. And shipping after the pandemic became very expensive, so it was a lesson learned on that one. But yeah,
I might have to pick your brain later about distribution, because that's a challenge that I have with the books that we do for our competition that we run every year. So yeah, it's,
yeah,
like when the pallets show up at my door and there's 1,000, you know, well, in my case, it's more like 600 books, but whatever, you know, it's like, okay, I know what I'm doing for the next week.
Yeah. Yeah. So we can definitely chat. I know two different companies I research and they're not super expensive and you can have them shipped directly to them.
That's cool. I like that idea a lot. And it probably, to some degree, is a wash in terms of your time and materials costs and things like that. So
exactly. Right. Yeah. Because they'll do the packaging, the labeling. You just have to integrate to their system, the order form. So that helped a lot. And I will actually use that method on the next books. I'll have, rather than all the books getting shipped to me and then me shipping them to the distribution center, I'll ship it, have it shipped directly to them. And then that cuts out a double shipment cost.
But yeah.
Well, and every little bit counts when you self-publish, right? Because it's nickels and dimes. You don't make a living off of publishing books these days.
Not easily. That's for sure. Well, so in your books, you're combining poetry, or like you say, poetic writing, with your photographs. I would love for you to talk a little bit about how that particular approach of combining photos with poems has helped you find clarity and helped you kind of cope with the world that you found yourself in through the pandemic.
The best way it does is it makes me look into nature deeper, I'll say. Kind of, it's guru-ish, I guess, but it's really, nature has so much to offer us and teach us and has stored wisdom, and we overlook it when we live in urban places and if we don't go out. And so, especially now when I would say my work process when I go out photographing is spend a few moments just being present and just calming down. And digital, we want to just click, 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 click type of a thing. And so I actually have retaken up film photography to try to slow me down, but I still use the crutch of my digital, but it has helped me slow down. So I just like to go into nature and look around, not only for what I want to capture and how I want to compose my image and that, but it's like, just feel what's there, feel how I feel and how I'm relating and what's kind of troubling me at the moment or what I'm excited about. It doesn't have to be all down and like, oh, I can be jubilant about something and then I see this glorious sunrise or something. Like I went over to the Badlands of South National Park in South Dakota last summer, and there's like this amazing sunrise coming up over the pinnacles of the Badlands, and it's just like, just speaking to me like a symphony was. And so I created a poem called Crescendo based on that one. And it was just capturing all that. And it's just, it was in awe and in thanksgiving and in gratitude. So they will happen. Thoughts will come to my mind. I'll try to capture them in a book afterwards, or sometimes do a recording on my phone. But usually I'll come back with the photo and I'll actually, as I'm uploading them and curating and then doing some preliminary processing to see potential, that's when I sort of start formulating a little bit more what's kind of speaking to me. What am I feeling in it? Now I'm kind of focusing on what's the essence of that moment, and what was the essence of that image I captured, or the series of images, and how can I put that into some writing, whether it's a little haiku or a variant of a haiku or a longer multi-stanza poem. And then it'll be, it usually relates to what I'm feeling comes out so as well.
I love that. And I was curious, when you're coming up with the words that go with the actual photograph, it sounds like sometimes it comes to you right away, like in the moment of capture, and you're like, oh, I have to say it into my phone or write it down really fast. But it also sounds like sometimes it comes to you later as you're processing the images. What's the split there in terms of things coming to you right away versus later on in the process?
Great question. Gosh. My first instinct says it's probably more 70% is post. But then as I'm kind of going through it and putting down words and capturing it, it's memories and triggers from the experience are coming back and coming out. So they were there, I believe, and maybe I didn't take enough time to really be in the moment there, and now I'm reliving the moment and being in this moment with it, and it's kind of formulating. Or I know there are some cases where a certain word will come in and it'll be sort of a topic or the main component that I'm feeling, and that will still be there. And then it's just what goes around it, and how do I weave that into it? Like, for example, we were in Glacier National Park last fall, and it was an amazing fall. I don't know if in Colorado you had as amazing one, but they had a lot of good winter and rain and spring rain and summer rain. And then the fall was just glorious. And so there were these reflections on the water flowing, the river that flows through the Glacier National Park. And the reflections were just stunning. And so I just sat there for probably an hour and a half taking pictures, and looking back at them later, there was one that as I was processing the conflicts in Europe and Middle East were happening. And so the colors were falling off the edge of the image, and so I was thinking a lot about the fallen soldiers and the fallen people that have been dying in that. And so, and then it was fall time, and so I ended up writing a poem called Fallen based around this picture that was helping me through that and think through it, as well as how I felt this image, what the image was speaking to me. So
that's powerful. I think it's pretty incredible that you're able to use the photography combined with the writing as a mechanism for processing what's going on in your life or what's happening in the world. And I'm guessing that that combination also helps you form a more personal relationship with the work that you're producing.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think we all, as photographers, all of our images are our children, if you will, and people always, what's your favorite? And it's like, well, how do you decide which one? But they're more connected to me, I guess, now, because it's a multifaceted artistry, I think. And so I see it from both sides. I do feel I remember and a lot more from the image side. The poems, I don't memorize them. I kind of go through them, and then sometimes I revisit. I have some different thoughts, and if I've reposted afterwards on some of them, I might do some revisions on it and maybe a little cleanup, or it usually doesn't change the meaning or the subject and how it was dealing with, but it's more a better word, I think, could have been expressed here, or I could break it out a little bit different. But I do like going back and looking at them we were, I don't remember what it was recently, we were kind of hunkered down for a little bit, and I was actually revisiting even my books. I was revisiting back to them and reading through them. I'm like, oh, it's so relevant today to me as it was 3 years ago. I really needed to hear that message again. And so I would read through it and look at the image, and it was still talking to me. So that was a good thing.
And I feel like your work is a good example of something I try to teach students. If you focus on making the images for yourself and making it more about a process for you to relate to nature or relate to the subject that you're capturing, and you don't worry about external validation, or you don't worry about what other people are going to think about the image when you capture it, when that connection happens, eventually your audience will gravitate to it, and they will appreciate it, and it will provide meaning to them, and they will find things about your photography and about your work that is of benefit to them. And it sounds like that's something that you've experienced through your photography.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. And that's definitely my experience. Like I've done workshops with other photographers, and I find that if I usually in those workshops, I might gravitate to what a photographer's approach and style is, and I'd want to try it. It ends up being, I don't get any decent pictures that I feel good about, especially if I try to mimic somebody. I was like, oh, there's crap. And then I have to walk away, and I have to go take maybe what I learned and use some, it might help me think a little differently, but then I go back to what works for me, and I find, oh, these images are really good. Yeah, I've done that several times on workshops where I've been at a site, thought this is an awesome place, 3-4 days with the other photographers and that, and there was nothing. I wasn't comfortable with anything, but then I go back, and then I stay longer, and I'm on my own, and I like, oh, how did I miss that? I was right there. Oh gosh, this is amazing. It's because then I was doing it for me and my way, and letting my heart drive the photography as opposed to my brain trying to drive it. And you know, people talk about being in the flow, and then I felt I was in the flow that versus I'm just trying to regurgitate what somebody else's flow is, and that doesn't work.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, relating to workshops, I think the best thing you can do as a participant is to try to incorporate the things you're learning from the workshop leader into your own personal workflow later on. So yeah. I think a lot of people go into workshops with the mindset that they're going to get all these amazing photographs on the workshop, which can happen for sure, right? But yeah. Like the real benefit is to take bits and pieces of what you learn and incorporate it into your own toolbox.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And feel comfortable that you're then getting to a confident level that you can be your own workshop. So you can, I mean, that I don't want to discourage from people going to workshops and that, because you get to meet some other great artists, you get to be some great locations, you get to understand how other people, and you can process that for yourselves. But it's really, I believe it's really about what I'm drawn to and what I see and what I feel. And those are the ones that I take extra interest into when I'm working on them and processing them and sharing them with others. And others will see it, as you were mentioning earlier, others will see those images that you really, your eyes light up when you share them with them, or they can just feel it in the image that, oh, Matt and Kent, they really got into this one. This really touched them, that image, so.
Yeah, that's great. Well, maybe you could talk a little bit about the upcoming gallery exhibition that you have that's gonna showcase your photography and your poetry.
Thanks. So this will be my first solo exhibition. It's going to be in Bismarck, North Dakota, where I grew up. I had done a gallery show there 2019, a joint one with an abstract painter, and we can talk about that later. But this show is going going to be May 1st through June 28th, and it's called the Capitol Gallery in Bismarck, North Dakota. The title of the show is Invite Nature Inside with Whispers. So I refer to whispers as the poetry part, and then the imagery are the combination is kind of whispers from nature. But I believe that, and I've studied quite a bit about the impact that nature has on us from a well-beingness. And so if we can invite nature into our homes, our offices, our hearts, our friendships, our relationships, etc., it helps our well-being. And there's studies that show even if you can't get out to nature by hanging and buying a nature photography or an art piece of nature, that works as well. So you can do it sort of by osmosis or as a surrogate. So this show is going to have, I'm still working on the actual numbers. It's probably between 25 to 35 images will fit in. It's a decent sized gallery, and I'll probably do two images. Probably for every three images, there'll be a poem. So not every image is gonna have a poem with it. Similar to the book, there'll be an image and then there'll be a poem by it, and then there'll be some space and that to hang those. The books will be there. Some pieces I'm co-collaborating on with some other artists to have some pieces in there. We have some different ideas on that as well. Yeah, and then I have some aspirational, so it's about how can I do it? Because it's with nature, I want to sort of set up little vignette rooms, if you will, and I want to have a tree in there, like indoor trees, maybe some orchids around some haiku, and I'd love to have a big boulder. My son suggested maybe finding one made out of styrofoam or something instead of like some two-ton boulder rolling in a water system or something. But so the aspirational to have bringing more nature inside. So we'll see how I pull that off. So
that's fun. Yeah, I'm curious, when you first learned about this, all of the positive impacts that nature can have on us, it was fairly evident to me just through my own personal experiences in nature, but the first time I actually made the connection on a scientific basis was in a Hidden Brain podcast I listened to, where they had a researcher come on and they talked about all of this research they did with exposing people to spending more time in forests, actually. And they actually tested, you know, their cortisol levels and their blood pressure, and they tested their blood for the presence of things that fight off infections and things like that as well.
Yep.
And what they found was like the people that spent time in nature, all of those things are improved. And it's not just like the day after, it lasts for weeks at a time. And then, like you said, what I thought was even more interesting is that if you're just shown pictures of nature, that it actually has the same exact benefit. I mean, it's not as much. But it does. Right. It is the same. I actually wrote a whole article about it on my website. But I'm curious, when did you first learn about some of those connections?
I think it was similar kind of a deal, but it was a book I was reading. Somebody had recommended, I believe the book that I first started on was called The Nature Fix. Mm. And it's like 10 or 12 chapters, and they look at nature from a different pieces of impact. And it was a writer, she was a journalist, or she's a former journalist, I think, in the East Coast. And so I read that book and I got really fascinated. One of the sections was forest bathing, but they had all the research. So then I got excited about that. So I started reading, it's Dr. Kui-Ling, I think is the Japanese doctor that was doing all the research. So it's going down the same path as you were. And then I started going to the next book and another book and some other research on it to see what are the benefits. And I totally bought into it. I agree with it. I know when I'm out walking, whether it's on a coastal right here or by the coast, if I'm walking along the ocean and the waves are crashing, or I'm in a forest, or I'm along even in the plains of North Dakota, I can feel the positive impact it has on my well-being. And so that reiterated. And then there was the studies about how you can just have an art piece up of nature, and it does the same effect. And doctors and patients will do better in hospital rooms when they are looking, they have a window or they have some nature that they can project them. And then it turns out different colors of nature have different impacts. And so I started a series as well on my, when I was blogging for a while, about the color green and nature, and I wrote a post on that. I got all the material to write some other colors and other aspects. I need to get out of an RV to kind of put more time on that. So, excuse, I guess. But yeah, it's there, and it's people realize it, and some people know it, and I think doctors and hospitals are understanding how it helps them, especially pain management. It does a lot with reducing or increasing tolerance of pain, or not harboring so much on the pain, and they can then recover a little bit faster. So that's a big positive. When you're in northern climates and you don't have the winter sun, having nature in your home and your office helps with your mood and outlook and stuff, so you can get through that a little bit better. So yeah, that's why I believe inviting nature inside is key into our spaces. So
yeah, I'm curious. You know, you're equipped with this knowledge about all these positive impacts that nature has on the human body, the mind, our spirit. How do those impacts inform the way that you approach photography and poetry?
On the photography side, it helps me go to, I think some people use the term quiet landscape, or maybe minimalist landscape, or quiet landscape, I think, is the term that kind of connects more with my style. I will try to photograph less, I don't know the right word. I don't want to say noisy or busy, but less energetic, or, you know, it's not going to be, I would love to photograph a volcano erupting, but that would not be kind of a quiet landscape scenario.
Right.
But things like a waterfall, even though there's a lot of energy and action with water, and that can be a very energetic photo, there's a very calming effect in water and water sounds of water. So photographing it in a way that I capture that a little bit better is a good thing. That's influenced my photography. Even if I did, when I go out and maybe do some urban or street photography, I end up doing more simple photographs than a congested street corner. Even though I find that fascinating, but I will probably focus a little bit different on an oddity on a building or something that, and put it in a more minimalist format of composition, I guess.
Yeah, it's interesting. I found myself gravitating more and more over the last 4 or 5 years to simpler, more minimalistic scenes that are just, you know, you're distilling down the essence of the subject. You're trying to exclude as much extraneous detail as possible in order to just really tell the viewer, like, this is what I noticed, this is why I like it, this is what I want to say with it. And I personally find that makes it so much easier for, you know, using composition, conveying the idea, and really just hitting home what you're trying to do with the image. Early on, I was, you know, wide angle everything, and there's so many things going on, and it's like, what's this photo about? And now it's, for me, I'm just much more able to portray them to the viewer in a way that makes sense, you know?
Yeah, same. And I go back and forth about my lens choices as well. Do I go to intimate and use a longer telephoto and to go more intimate, or getting closer type subject? So I'll do some of that, but then at the same time, I do use a wide angle lens fairly often, but I compose it differently, and I might be drawn in to one aspect of it, or a timing of the large grandiose landscape, I might be drawn in differently, and so it will come out like, I love fog, as I think a lot of landscape photographers might like fog as well. But that can simplify on a grand, you know, if you have a wide angle, that can also simplify it down, and it's just, or snow can do the same, etc. So
right, yeah.
So I enjoy the wide angles, but I also I use all my lenses, I think.
Oh, for sure. It's just easier to convey a message when you simplify the composition, which can be done with a wide-angle lens, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, shifting a little bit, how has your perception of your personal well-being shifted since you made some of these connections between nature and health?
It's helped on a, it shifted on, well, a big shift was doing the RV life. And big shift was just going full time, living out in nature. And that reinforced it. So we thought that might be 1 year. We're going on to the fourth year. We already know if we do find a house, we're not going to get rid of the camper. We're going to may get a smaller one, but we're going to continue that, incorporating that in. We do know then that place we're looking for, our ideal place is going to be in nature, have space around it, have acreage as opposed to yard or feet around it, so we can actually incorporate that into it. It's rethinking about some foods and things we eat and those aspects of our diet. When I say we, it's my wife and I, so we both buy into this and that component of it. We just know that it, when we get stressed, we go out walking and we just get outdoors, and even if it's a neighborhood park. So all of those things we didn't appreciate as much before. We might have incorporated them, but now we appreciate a lot more and we're a little bit more present when we're out there than we were before. It wasn't rush through a hike and get it done. It was, okay, walk through the woods or walk through the trails and observe and notice and maybe stop a little bit more often. Seeing things that, you know, the old ad, what's the old cliche, stop to smell the roses. So here we might be stop to look at the pine needles or stop to look at the dandelion or whatever it is, or the wheat stalk.
Yeah, and of course, photography is such a great way to kind of force yourself to do that because you start seeing the world so much differently.
And then and it also has changed where it's put the camera down and enjoy it. I mean, I'm a big follower of Guy Tall, and, you know, he'll a lot of times will just say, yeah, I don't take my camera. I'll just be there and I'll just enjoy that nature. And like, okay, right. I don't have to capture it. I'm not going to miss out on it. I can relish that sunrise or that sunset or that wind whispering through a willow tree. And now I can write some words around it, and then I can relive it and share it.
That's awesome. Yeah, I just finished a 2 7-day long workshops in Yellowstone, and then the very last night, which was 2 days ago, we went up to this huge overlook that overlooked the valley where Gardner, Wyoming is, or
yeah,
I guess it's in Montana. Anyway, and we had this incredible sunset that was like 360 degrees, and we're all just photographing away. And I stopped everyone. I said, everyone, just step away from your camera and just look around and appreciate this moment. This is incredible, you know? Like, just take this in because it really is special.
Yeah. We'll do a similar, my wife and I, she definitely comes out with me on nighttime, and we'll just have our time. Well, I'll be set up and we'll do some pictures, and she'll put, if it's nice weather, we'll put a spread down on the ground. She'll have the cheese and crackers and wine, and then I'll take some pictures. And then after kind of the glorious moments are passing out, we'll just sit and we'll just be there looking at the environment, enjoying our time together and just sitting there. So it's incredible.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. All right. Well, I had one more topic that I wanted to discuss with you today. And you'd mentioned a little bit about this early on in the conversation about the role of collaboration and how that's benefited you. I have a very strong interest in collaborating with others, and especially I have some ideas about trying to maybe like work with photographers that aren't even into nature and landscape and like send each other raw files and just see how we process it, just to learn from each other. But what are some of the ways that you've collaborated with others to create art or to improve your process of creating art?
So really, I really enjoyed this aspect of what I've come upon. I'm going to split collaboration into two parts. So one is I'm part of a group of like 10 or 12 photographers in the South Florida area. And we collaborate more around support and less critiquing, but support and ideas. Because we, as I mentioned earlier, they come from different disciplines or genre of photography. So it's more about collaborating ideas and seeing what's possible to do that. And we now meet mostly monthly, maybe every 6 weeks over Zoom, and get together and we spread out. Not everybody's down here anymore. The other collaboration, which is actually collaborating, creating new artwork. So in about 2016 or so, I was back up in North Dakota and I was with friends and I saw this amazing painting it was a dinner party and it was on the person's house on the wall. And I'm like, gosh, this is incredible. It was abstract. It was very vibrant. It was colorful. It's just all over. And it just shouting at me and like, oh, well, that's amazing. Well, the owner of the house, she goes, oh, that's Jessica. And she's here right now. She's the artist. So I met this young woman she's in her 30s and she's this abstract painter and that's what she does. So we just started clicking and talking and they're like, oh, we should do something. And she threw it up. Oh, we should do something. I'm like, I could not think about how to do that at all. And so about 2 years went by. We kind of talked and off and on the phone and texting. And she said, well, what about if I paint on one of your images? And so I'm like, okay, is it her image, my image? Does it devalue my image? And that, so we thought about it. And I'm like, what the heck? Let's just try something. So I said, okay, what do you want me to print on? And what would you do it with? And she is big oil painter. And she does large scales, like 6 feet by 6 feet or 10 feet by 10 feet canvases. And she's like almost like Pollock, where she's like throwing paint around and doing stuff. And I'm just this quiet, simple type landscape photographer. So we decided we would test different things. So I printed some metal pieces, shipped it to her. I printed on some really nice fine art paper, which is my favorite, which is Hahn Mueller's William Turner. It's a matte paper with high texture. And she could do some pastels on it. And then she had these, they're sort of like shadow boxes. They were 16 inches square and they were probably about 8 inches deep. And she was going to use that in the past where she had painted on a small canvas and put it on the inside and then put glass over it. So we thought about, what if I print on the glass and I have an image, so now I have to, it's not a full image where it's solid. I had to make it very minimalist. And so we found a printer that could do a UV printing on glass, and then we had to print on the backside so it wouldn't scrape off. So I had to reverse the image. So I did down to basically you blow it out so the highlights go to 256 or whatever, and it becomes, so then the glass is clear. And I did them on monotone, so I did some on black, and we tried with different colors, green, brown, etc. And we put that on over her piece. So some, she had some pieces already painted. And I was like, oh, this piece would work really well with this image. And so we see if that would work in it. And another one is I did the image on the glass and then she painted something and put it underneath. So that was one approach. We did the pastel. I had done some intentional camera motion photos of a pond in Scotland and they were very abstract, and so she painted on those sold really well. Then we did different sizes. Now we're working on one for the next show. I have this portrait of a horse I took in North Dakota, and so I sent her four versions, and so she's been painting on that, and we'll put them up, and then I'll have my piece separate as well as a kind of a collection.
Interesting.
Then I'm working with another artist where I told her, she's a watercolor painter, and I said, okay, I've got a Christmas card from her, and I loved it. It was a very nice landscape that she had done, and it's like, oh, this is beautiful. Why don't you do a something springy landscape, and then get it to me in time, and I'll work on writing some poem around it, and we'll put that in the show as well. So it's a poetry that goes with her image, and I've done that in Vero. I have a group of artists that we connect with, and they have some images, and I've just been moved by them. So I'll write something and post it in the comment, and then some of them have taken them and added it to it, and you know, give me credit on that piece of it. Then I'm working with another artist. She's, I'd say, a minimalist landscape photographer, more clouds and mountains. So we're going to talk tomorrow about her creating a painting based on a poem. So I'll try to interview her, maybe hopefully be able to write something and then give it to her and then see what she paints from it, because she's going to have a show, and maybe that could go in her show then, the two of them.
That's awesome. So I mean, if someone else is looking to collaborate like that, what do you think the best approach would be in terms of trying to forge those relationships? Just be bold, or
don't hold on to your piece as sacred.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
and be able to allow it to be morphed into something different, and it may be equally as good or better or something like that, and just experiment. And then learn, meet people in other artistic disciplines and learn about them and themselves and their art and their passions. And like, I spent a lot of time with Jessica in her studio. She had never let anybody in her studio before. And so I was like, well, I gotta better understand, because it'll help me figure out what images might go or how maybe we could work together. And so I went to her studio. I visited North Dakota a lot of time because she's from up there as well. And then one time we went down to her, where she grew up as a kid along the Missouri River. And so I started doing some motion photos of the river in the fall time. And that ended up being a seed to some images as well that she worked on, because it touched her heart. So I went to where she had fond memories, passions, and I could see some images, some compositions that possibly could work, and they did. So I'd be open to meet other artists, be willing to offer up your babies and see what happens. That would be cool to find out if something could happen with a sculpture or really. Writing's easy. I sort of done that myself, but I could do that with other writers in that piece, and that's been done probably lots. I'd love to figure out how to do it with another photographer, but I'm not really sure. You know, maybe it's multi-exposure, but two cameras, two different locations or something. Maybe you and I are somewhere where you like, let's overlay them and like see what that comes up as a multi-exposure.
That's a fun idea. Yeah, that's a really good idea. Well, nice. I feel like that gives everyone a lot to chew on right there, because I think there's a lot of possibilities that can come out of that. And I think I've always felt like the more that you can collaborate with others, and you're going to become a better person, you're going to become a better photographer, you're going to start seeing the world a little bit differently. You can incorporate how other people see the world into the way you see the world. So I think it's a great way of just growing as a person and as an artist.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, most artistic disciplines are teams, like music.
Right.
You know, you have an individual, but you have a lot of musicians work together, right? Yeah. So we could tend to, maybe in photography, we tend to just focus solo from a creation standpoint, then maybe doing something collaboratively together.
Yeah. All right. Well, my last question, who do you recommend for the podcast? Who are some folks that we should learn more about?
Okay. So one, couple of them. This woman, she doesn't get as much credit as she deserves right now. Her name is Janine Hennebry. So she is out doing landscape photography, incredibly amazing. I met her in Death Valley, December 2020. She's a very accomplished photographer, but most people have, you would have seen all of her work before if you were a golfer. And her and her brother have done golf courses around the world. Pebble Beach, they're one of the only few that get to photograph Pebble Beach, and they've been doing it for many years. And so she started stepping out more into landscape. She is incredible. She's a very hardworking photographer. She's a very nature. She has a very Buddhist mentality for being in nature and respecting it. And she does these incredible photos. She lugs around a Phase One and an Icon. And she does amazing work. So Janine Hennebry is definitely one. There's a guy I just ran into recently, and I've actually physically met him. His name is Michael Scanling. He's out of San Francisco, and he does these really incredible, super minimalist horizon lines, I'll call it. I mean, he's able to find just a very simple, beautiful piece of art and magic out of horizons, whether it's clouds, and he lives in the Bay Area, so he's got some phenomenal stuff from there. Another woman out of Belgium that I've met only online is Marleen Van Hove, and she's very minimalist and really, really good minimalist stuff. It makes me think a lot of Michael Cannon type work, and so I learned something from her images when I look at them as well. Then Sherry Mabby, she does a lot of infrared and landscape. She's actually an artist in resident in Denver right now, and she's from Colorado.
Okay.
And so I've only met her also via online, but super intrigued by her approach. I'm not into infrared photography, but I get really drawn to hers a lot. Some of my colleagues are in infrared, so I kind of understand the nuances of it, but I like hers a lot. And then one guy that I've also been following is David Henley. So he does a lot of, I like his black and whites a lot, and I think he deserves a lot of credit. And many of them don't have a lot of followers, and I think they should. And not just to follow, but they do amazing work. And I think there are a lot of unsung heroes out there in the photography world.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I love about doing this podcast is I get introduced to all of these amazing photographers that no one's ever heard of before. So that's great. Thank you so much, Kent. And this has been a really fun conversation. And like I said, we're going to do another bonus episode for Patreon for kind of your transition to becoming a full-time photographer. But just thank you so much for your time. And how can people learn more about your books?
Well, first, I want to thank you for having me on and for doing this for artists of all different types and backgrounds in that. I think that's a great service you're doing to the community and the world. So thank you. My books, the easiest way is get them on my website. So it's kjbimages.com. And so the two are out there, and that's where I'll kind of post them. They're off through Amazon, but it actually comes through me. And you'd be better off coming through my website than going through Amazon. So
right. Awesome. Well, thanks again, Kent, and looking forward to our bonus chat.
Yes, thank you.
Well, thank you to Kent for the great chat today on the episode. I really love what you're doing, and I appreciate you sharing your thoughts with the world on the show. I'd love to hear from listeners about this episode. After listening, what thoughts or ideas do you have for collaboration with other artists? Just head over to patreon.com/fstop and listen to join in on the conversation. It's open to everyone, even if you're not a member. Cheers. Okay, that's all for now. Thanks for stopping in, collaborating with us, and listening. See you next week.